Sounds like my dad's basement in the 1970s. Hell, it sounds like my SUV in 2012. McNeil and Spiegel on the Score Sports Radio 670, welcoming the company of Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Alice Cooper. Coop, how are you, man?
How you guys doing?
Outstanding. Welcome back to Chicago this Thursday night in Tinley Park. Does it still feel like home every now and again when you come back to a city in which you once lived?
Oh, yeah. We used to live at Lake Point Towers in 84 and 85. And, you know, spent a lot of time in Chicago. I was born in Detroit, but, you know, when you're a band, you spend a lot of time in Chicago.
You know, I got to ask you, seeing you in December, it occurs to me, and you're in your early 60s now, with everything you've got going on, with as much golf as you're playing and doing the radio show, which I catch locally on X-Rock, and all the stuff you do for Callaway, your foundation, do you ever wake up in the morning and think, damn, I got to put on the makeup tonight and point fiercely at my audience? I wish I could just stay in the hotel and relax.
That's the one thing that I look forward to, is getting on stage. That's, you know, that's when you feel most alive, I think, is when you're Alice, because you've got the audience, and every single song you start, they react to. And, you know, when you've got a band that's just like the best band that you've ever had, it's really something. It's the high point of the day, really.
You know, there's been so many bands since you started doing what you do, Alice, that have kind of fused the theater and the rock and roll and included the makeup and some of the stage stuff that you and your band kind of came up with. And I wanted to ask you to go back to the beginnings of it. I just, having read this, a little bit of Bette Davis and whatever happened to Baby Jane in terms of all the makeup, right? There was a couple different films and things like that that gave you this idea.
Well, you know, when you looked at that movie, the band used to sit around watching all the old movies, you know, and you saw Baby Jane, who was like, she was 70, and she was trying to look like she was 8, you know, and so she had all this caked up makeup on and this really garish black around her eyes, and the lipstick was kind of smeared, you know, and there was this really bad beauty mark on the left side, and it was all cracked, and it looked really horrific. I mean, it was almost like the Joker. You know, Heath's a Joker.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think he got that makeup from her. But that, you add that, and you add the Black Queen from Barbarella and two or three other things. And, you know, I said, there's an Alice in there. There's a look there that I want to come up with for Alice. That even though Alice is extremely heterosexual, I mean, what's wrong with borrowing that scary look for him?
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with that. So it was this thought-out thing. You sat down and decided to create a gimmick, if you will, or really just an act, a show.
Well, Rock didn't have a villain. Rock had all heroes. All you had was Rock heroes. And I'm sitting around going, you know, you've got all these Peter Pans and no Captain Hook. You know, I will gladly be Captain Hook.
It took until 2011 for your enshrinement in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and it's probably not easy for you to say this if, in fact, you feel that way, but it is for me as a fan of 40 years. It's about damn time. I think for so long, people looked at that genre of shock rock, and they think the silly chicken incident or the guy with the snake. I don't think you've been given enough credit for how brilliant your music has been.
Well, you know, that was the thing. We had a definite problem with that when we were starting out, because all the other bands thought, well, you know, this is just all gimmick and now music. They didn't realize we would do an 8-hour rehearsal. 7 hours was on the music. And, you know, we were competing with Led Zeppelin and the Stones and, you know, everybody in the world out there. In those days, you couldn't just have an act. You had to have a great band. You had to have a great live band. So, really, we spent all of our time rehearsing on the music until we got to be a really, really good, proficient band. Then you add the theatrics to it, you know. It's sort of like if Dennis Rodman didn't get 20 rebounds a game, you shouldn't have leopard skin hair, you know. You've got to be able to back up what you look like.
Yeah, he got away with that because he could do certain things better than anybody.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, Muhammad Ali could say, I'm the greatest because, you know, he's knocking everybody out.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, obviously you're a sports guy. You're a sports fan with a reference like that. And you're a golfer, sort of legendarily one of the better golfers of anybody in the entertainment industry. It's probably been a long time since you felt any sort of nervousness on a stage? Or maybe not, but
I wish I could get that back. I honestly wish I could get nervous again. You know, because it was something about that that was fun, that was like that made your stomach kind of turn over a little bit and made you a little bit weak in the knees. And there was something great about that and then the curtain opening and then you just blasting out there. Now, I mean, I know what's going to happen. I'm not really nervous about anything now because I've got a lot of confidence in everything, but I do kind of miss the nervousness of it.
You know, we talk about music and sports a lot on this show, and was wondering if there's any similarity in terms of the way that you have to approach a golf shot or a golf round, you know, and trying to stay calm, trying not to worry, that kind of thing.
It's really interesting. I play my best golf when there's a lot of people watching. So it's like when I play, if you're going to play a tournament, the last place you want to play is the Phoenix Open if you can't play in front of people, because there's 125,000 people there on Pro-Am Day. Well, I had 6 birdies last year, you know, on when there's 125,000 people watching. If I was there and they weren't watching, I'd probably, you know, have 1 or 2.
Alice, I read in Golf Monster that your recommendation to high handicappers, which is what I am, would be to, at whatever cost, play with somebody, if possible, who can teach you a thing or two about the game. You're in town. How big is the check that I have to write to Alice Cooper's Solid Rock nonprofit organization to get you out for 18 holes Thursday?
Well, you know what? I've got, if you call and find out, you know, where we're playing, because Callaway sets up everything for us. I would be glad. I've got 2 or 3 things. Are you righty or lefty?
I'm right-handed.
Okay, you're right-handed. And what is your biggest problem? Hitting it right?
No, I hit it a long way, which I know would work for you because I'm a message sender when the group in front is taking too much
That's
time.
Good. I like that.
Yeah, I know you do. My biggest problem is what I do when I get to the green. I hit a green in regulation, and I might as well just sit in the cart and write down a bogey.
Okay, it's called glasses. You have a problem? You three putt a lot?
I can't putt. And I thought it was going to get better when I quit drinking. It's gotten worse.
Have you tried a long putter?
No, I haven't tried the long putter yet. It intimidates me, man.
That was my cure. When I was like a 7 handicap, when I went to the long putter, I went to 3.
No kidding.
All of a sudden, I could putt. I thought I was going to make everything.
You know, our guy, he just likes to drive the ball a long way. When he gets to the green, then he loses interest. He's like a guitar player who just wants to solo and doesn't want to play the rhythm parts, Alice. That's the problem for him. You know?
You need like an auxiliary putter with you. Find some really good-looking girl that can putt.
You know, I got to ask you a few things about Golf Monster, which is one of my favorite rock biographies ever, an autobiography in this case. Tell us the truth. You really said no to Raquel Welch? Come on,
yes,
Alice.
Because I just met my wife, Cheryl, who I've been with now 36 years.
Wow.
And who is better looking than Raquel. And it was just one of those things where, like, you know, when you fall in love with that person, that's all you can think about. And so, I mean, it was just, I couldn't help it. I was chemically and physically in love with this person.
Let's talk about chemicals. And I admire a lot about you, at the risk of going Chris Farley. I mean, I go back to the Nightmare Tour. That's my first experience at the International Amphitheater in 76 or 77.
Yeah.
But what I admire you for as much as anything is 30 years. 30 years now without a cocktail, without anything. For those of us who are new in the recovery game, steer us in the direction that you chose.
Well, 30 years, I had a blood test yesterday, and I'm still legally drunk. So, no, I mean, you know, it was what I always tell people is this. I said, look, if you're going to go in to, you know, for drinking because you got a drinking problem, don't go in to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
You're either going to stop or you're not going to stop. I mean, that's the real trick. I know so many guys that go in and say, well, I'm going to go in and cool out for a while.
It becomes a lifestyle.
What that means is you're going to be back 13 times.
Yeah. Hmm.
You're either going to stop or you're not going to stop, you know, and really, to me, it was a matter of stop or die. You know, I mean, I was like, I was on my way to Jim Morrison's house, wherever that is, you know, it was like I was throwing up blood in the morning. So it was a matter of stop or die. And then a lot of those guys had the same problem, except they just kept going.
I wanted to ask you about Jim Morrison, too. How far gone was he? What might have kept him around?
The fact that he got to 27 years old was a modern medical miracle. You know, I mean, the guy was the most abusive guy to his own body that I've ever seen anybody. He was very smart. He was very, very funny. He had a great sense of humor. He was, you know, he was the artist. He was the poet. He was, you know, a very cool guy. But he used to take pills the way that you would take M&Ms, you know. And on top of that, he would swallow it down with Jack Daniels. And he really, and all he ever wrote about was getting to the other side.
Yeah. Hmm.
You know, I mean, the guy was just like bent on dying. Robbie Krieger's a real good friend of mine. Hmm. You know, and Robbie and I talk all the time. And he says, hey, I'm in the band with him. And I mean, I know he's going to die. You know he's going to die. And there's no way of getting him away from it.
When you were touring, you know, late 60s, early 70s, and then when things take off for you in 71, 72, and you're with all those bands on similar bills.
Yeah, we opened for the Doors. We only opened for two bands. We opened for the Doors and the Mothers of Invention.
Wow.
And then after that, you know, we kind of clicked in there. And then we took out bands. It's funny, the list of bands that opened for us were all ended up being mega, you know, and Guns N' Roses, AC/DC, ZZ Top. You know, we're all bands that we took out on their first tours, you know.
What's a band that you saw, like 71, 72, 73, that made you go, oh, man, we got to raise our game. These guys are just too damn good.
Well, we were, you know, we played one night at the Whiskey A Go-Go, and nobody had ever heard of us before. And nobody had ever heard of this other act that we were playing with called Led Zeppelin. And it was sort of like we looked at these guys, and I went, hey, that guy used to be in the Yardbirds. I was looking at Jimmy Page. And to me, that was a huge deal because the Yardbirds were our heroes, you know. So, you know, and then the very next night we played with another unknown band called Pink Floyd. That was like, you know, so you have to remember back in those days in L.A., all of the bands that are mega, mega, mega bands now were all local bands trying to make it. So we knew each other as just trying to compete for gigs, you know.
And your longtime friend and producer, collaborator Bob Ezrin ends up working with Pink Floyd and with you down the road.
Yeah, he ended up, you know, he did The Wall. So when we do Schools Out now, at the very end of Schools Out, we do the We Don't Need No Education.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
It fits right into Schools Out.
And it's happening Thursday at the First Midwest Bank Amphitheater in Tinley. Tickets available at LiveNation.com. Alice, oh, you know, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much. Tell our listeners a little bit about your Solid Rock Foundation before we let you run, man.
Well, Solid Rock is getting kids out of gangs and into music. You know, I mean, there's a lot of guys out there. I drive by guys, and I see them on the street. They're selling drugs, and they're packing, you know, and they got the whole thing. And I'm sitting there going, I'll bet you that one of these guys out here is an amazing guitar player, just doesn't know it. I'll bet you one of these guys is a great drummer or a bass player. So let's give them a chance. At least let's say, here, come on in. We'll give you the guitar. We'll give you the drums. We'll give you this. All you have to do is learn how to play. And what it does is just gets them away from a life where they're going to either die or go to jail. So, I mean, it's a free thing. Just come in for free. And, you know, hopefully it's going to save some lives.
And the website is AliceCooperSolidRock.com. I'm in touch with Callaway after this phone call. I'm going to write the big check for Solid Rock, and I'll see you on the golf course, hopefully Thursday morning, Alice. Thanks, man.
I will see you out there, and we will do it, and I'll fix that problem.
I hope that's the case. Take care, man. Great talking
okay,
with you.
Okay, man. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Tomorrow at Summerfest in Milwaukee, Thursday night in Tinley Park. There are a lot of imitators, but there is only one, Alice Cooper.